Fasten your seatbelt and turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip. Welcome to Route 51, regional talk radio for North Central Wisconsin. I'm Glenn Moberg, and today we are featuring for the full hour 7th District Congressional candidate Sean Duffy, a Republican who currently serves as District Attorney of Ashland County. Duffy is one of two announced Republican candidates vying for the opportunity to end incumbent Democrat Dave Obey's 40-year congressional career. He faces a primary challenge from Dan Milkey, the organic farmer who ran against Obey in the last election. Today we're going to get Mr. Duffy's take on the current debate over national health care, the efforts to revive the economy, the $780 billion stimulus package that Mr. Obey helped write as chair of the House Appropriations Committee, the growing deficit, the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, social issues like abortion and gay marriage, and his vision for the future of North Central Wisconsin. We're also going to give Sean the opportunity to respond to Dave Obey's own words recorded in an interview in our Wisconsin Public Radio studios just 1 week ago today. We also want to hear from you. Do you think that after 40 years, it's time for Dave Obey to go? Is Sean Duffy the man you'd like to see replace him? Or, in a matchup between the two, would you vote to put Obey back into office for yet another term? Please give us a call. Our lines, well, they're not open right now. They are full right now at 261-6371, 261-6371, or toll-free at 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Sean Duffy, thanks so much for driving down here from Ashland County today. Good to see you.
Hey, Glenn, thanks for having me on. We had a nice, beautiful day for a drive, and we made it just in time.
Tell us a little bit about yourself. Where did you grow up?
Well, I was born and raised in Hayward, and after I graduated from high school, I went on to get a college education, went on and got a law degree, and I knew that I wanted to have a family, and I knew that the best place to raise a family was right here in northern Wisconsin. So when I finished law school, I moved back to Hayward, where I practiced for a year and a half with my father in his law practice, and then I moved up to Ashland, where I started working as a special prosecutor in the DA's office, and a short time after that, a year and a half, I was appointed DA and was elected four times after that. So I've been the DA of Ashland County for 7 years. I'm a father of five, a former lumberjack, a speed climbing world champion on the 90-foot poles and the 60-foot poles, and so we have quite a colored past.
When did you realize you had an interest in politics?
Well, you know, it's probably been the last 10 years I started to follow politics a lot more. And when I got married to my wife, Rachel, she was a big political buff. And as we hung out and started talking politics, I loved it. And I started following politics more frequently. And I got involved in my local Republican Party. And from there, got involved in the 7th District Republican Party. And
you've been a Republican your whole life?
You know, I would say I was an independent and Republican my whole life.
How about your dad, if you don't mind me being so personal? A lot of what we do stems from how we grew up.
Sure. My mother was a diehard Democrat. My father was a Republican. And after voting for George Bush in 2000, they switched over, and they're both staunch Democrats right now, both my father and my mother.
You're kidding. What do they think of you?
I kid you not. And I come from a large family. I'm the 10th of 11 children, and the family split, half Republican, half Democrat. So our family outings
so
are quite interesting.
You're running for Congress, and you're the black sheep of the family.
Well, I wouldn't say black sheep. I do have some conservative brothers. But
I'm talking about in your parents' eyes.
Oh, in my parents' eyes, yes.
Now,
but they said they'll vote for me, which is a good thing.
You appeared in the MTV show The Real World, which I haven't seen, and I haven't taken the time to go back and look at old clips. But
and you're not missing much either, Glenn.
Since it's on MTV, I imagine there are some things that are embarrassing, some things that you probably regret being involved with. Do you think any of that could come back to haunt you?
Well, first let me say, if people watch that show today, the show that I did, you know, 12, 13 years ago is nothing like what they would see on TV today. I mean, it's pretty racy these days. My show was not like that. But the truth is, I was, you know, dancing on pool tables in my underwear, and I didn't have a significant other, and I was looking at younger women at the time. And you know what? Some of those things will come out. But the truth is, I think as we move forward in this election, I think people aren't concerned about a reality TV show 13 years ago. They're more concerned about their reality today. And you know, that stuff is behind me. But I'm sure that it'll come out. And I really have no regrets about it. I met my wife from doing that show. She had done a previous season from me. And had I not done the show, I would have never met her. She is the most amazing woman. She's my best friend, and she's the mother of our five children. So, you know, I can't say anything bad about the real world and meeting my wife.
You think your current job as a district attorney has helped prepare you for this race?
You know, I think it has. I look out for my community. I have the best interest of the people in Ashland County in my mind at all times. And I'm used to serving my community. And I think what this position is a position of serving the public. And I've served my constituents in Ashland County very well. And I look forward to taking what I've done in Ashland and representing the people here in the 7th District.
You're going to be running against Dan Mielke in the Republican primary. Why should voters choose you instead of him?
Well, you know, people have asked me that question, and I haven't spent much time at all looking at where Dan stands on the issues. I think I am setting myself out and setting my position as compared to Dave Obey's position, and that's what I've been focusing on. I imagine people will have an opportunity to hear what I have to say and what Dan has to say. They'll probably look at my website and Dan's website, and from that, they'll make a decision as to who's the best person to represent the 7th District. But before that, they'll make a decision who's the best Republican to take on Dave Obey and win and bring some sanity back to the 7th District here.
If Wisconsin Public Radio would sponsor a debate between you and Dan before the primary next spring, would you be interested in that?
You know, we'll see. I guess I'm always in favor of conversation and discussions on the issues. And I think that's been one of the problems with Dave Obey is that he'll have one debate, you know, 4 or 5 days before the election. I think it's important that we get out there and have our candidates discuss where they stand on the issues in plenty of time for people to see, you know, where they stand on the relevant issues of the day. So I'm always in favor of debate.
All right. Very quickly, I want you to just sum this up in a few sentences. Why should voters replace Dave Obey? Why should they choose you? Because we've got three people waiting to get on the radio here who've been waiting for 15 minutes on the phones already.
Sure. You know, Dave Obey has a lot of power in Washington, and he is the chair of appropriations. And I don't think Dave Obey is using that power and that influence for the best good of the country and of the 7th District. I think what we're doing with spending in Washington is a tragedy. We are mortgaging the future of our children. This year alone, we're going to borrow $1.8 trillion, and we're going to add that on to the $11.5 trillion deficit we have right now. This is unsustainable and it's unacceptable. And Dave Obey is a key player in mortgaging our children's future. I think it's unacceptable. That was one of the key reasons why I got in this race. And we're going to bring fiscal sanity and responsibility to Washington if we're elected here on the 7th.
All right. You kept it short. Let's go to our phones right now. We've got Phil in Rothschild. Excuse me. I just went to Charlotte in Clark County instead. Charlotte, you're on Route 51.
Oh, good evening. Good evening. I'd like to ask Sean what he thinks of Dave Obey appropriating $550 million for the luxury jets. Well, you know, Americans are suffering and the unemployment is almost 10%. What are your views on his ridiculous appropriations of that $550 million?
Thank you, Charlotte. You know, that's a good question because as Congress in Washington, D.C. have come down on struggling businesses for flying around the country on private jets, we're a near bankrupt country with huge debt. And at that time that we think our representatives would go out and buy new planes, buying more than that which was asked for by the Pentagon, I think is a tragedy. And what they've done is they've tucked that into the budget or into the defense spending bill so we can't find out who put the three extra brand new jets into the bill. But I will say this, that came through appropriations, and nothing goes through appropriations without having Dave Obey's fingerprints on it. And I think at a time when we are spending so much money, we need more fiscal responsibility. And this is a perfect example of the lack of respect that Mr. Obey has for the taxpayers' money, that he's going to go out there and buy jets so our congressmen and senators can fly around the country and the world on private jets instead of flying in commercial airlines like the rest of us.
Well, I haven't had a chance to talk to Mr. Obey about this and see exactly what, if any, his involvement was. So I'm not going to butt in here. But Charlotte, do you have a quick follow-up?
Well, I just think, yes, like you say, Sean, it's unconscionable that what he's doing to allow that in the appropriation bill. You know, thank goodness we've got some people who are interested in running and serving the community that are fiscally responsible. And you, Sean, sound like you want to bring that to Washington.
All right, Charlotte, thanks so much for the phone call. I'm gonna move on here because we do have other callers on the line. 261-6371, 261-6371, or 1-800-780-9742. Let's go now to Phil in Rothschild. Phil, you've been waiting for almost 20 minutes.
Hi.
Thanks for hanging in there.
You're welcome. Hey, Sean, my question is, where are you exactly on the stimulus stuff? Would you have voted for it?
No, I wouldn't have, Phil. I think that this so-called stimulus bill won't do much stimulating at all. I think it's a package that is pork-filled and is funding projects that Dave Obey approves of. But really, if you look at what kind of effect this massive government spending will have on stimulating the economy, I don't think it'll be much at all. And this is a spending project that is going to be paid back by our children.
Phil, thanks so much for the phone call. And I'll tell you what I'm going to do right now, Sean. Yes, you can, very quickly, though.
I would like to know how he would have gotten the economy going again if he were in Congress.
Thank you, Phil. And I think as I've traveled around this district, I've had a chance to talk to a lot of small business owners. And I've asked them, you know, how do we stimulate this economy? How do we get you guys to grow your business, to invest in your business? And resoundingly, they say, first off, leave us alone. Stop regulating us. But second of all, they say, we think if you gave us some tax breaks and you gave families tax breaks, if you actually put the money that was dumped into the stimulus bill and you put that into tax breaks for Wisconsin families and Wisconsin small business, there'll be more money flowing through the economy, which in turn would stimulate it. But to think that we're going to give money to certain projects that have been laid out in the stimulus bill, I don't think that's going to do it. And I wouldn't make one other point there. I do think there is some good portions of the stimulus bill. If we're going to build roads in the next 5 years, let's build them today. And there's portions of the stimulus bill that provide for that. But there's a great deal of pork in the bill, and I'm opposed to a vast majority of it.
Phil, it sounds like you think the stimulus bill wasn't such a bad idea.
No, I don't. In fact, Bush tried a tax cut, and people just put the money in savings, and it didn't stimulate anything. So why do some more of that?
And I think that's a good question, Phil, but the facts are different. When Bush cut taxes in early 2000, we saw the federal coffers increase in cash. And I think that sounds counterintuitive that if you reduce taxes, you'd bring in less money. But the truth is there's more economic activity in the market, which means we bring in more tax revenue. When you increase taxes, we see less tax revenue coming in to the Federal Reserve. And that's what we're seeing right now. The collections at the Fed level have decreased dramatically.
Please, one more question.
Very quickly.
So why don't we cut taxes to zero? That'll bring in tons of money.
And Phil, that's a good point.
I know it sounds funny, but really, isn't that what you're saying? Less means more?
No, I'm not. Phil, if you look at small businesses, they're taxed at 35%. We're at one of the top tax rates in the industrialized world. We need to cut our taxes so our businesses are going to be competitive on the global stage. And I think the counterpoint to that would be, listen, that means let's just do away with small business and have government, you know, throw money all over the country, and that's going to stimulate the economy. You can't give me one example of a country out there that has dumped a ton of money into their economy and have been successful, especially when they're borrowing it from places like China.
Phil, thanks so
okay,
much for the phone
welcome.
Call. I'll give you an example that some people have pointed to, the United States of America during the Great Depression, when Franklin Delano Roosevelt, following Keynesian economic theory, dumped lots of money into the economy and pulled it back from the brink of recession.
In what year was that, Glenn?
Oh, that was in the 30s.
Well, if you look at history through the 30s, we were struggling to recover, and we had from 1929 through the 30s, and we actually didn't recover until after World War II when folks came back and we had a little more common sense in our fiscal policy.
Well, this is what I've been hearing from economists. 6 months ago, many economists thought that we were teetering on the brink of a second Great Depression. The prediction was 25% unemployment, banks failing all over the country, nobody able to get credit for anything, small and large businesses folding, bread lines. That hasn't happened. Right now, 90% of economists surveyed this week think the recession is over, and some, like Nobel Prize-winning economist Paul Krugman, credits the stimulus bill written by Dave Obey for bringing America back from the brink of a second Great Depression and leading us to recovery. Now, if that's the case, you shouldn't be running to replace him. We ought to be raising statues to him.
Well, and I guess I would ask this, Glenn. You bring out that point. What in the $100 billion that have been spent thus far in the stimulus bill has stimulated this economy? Can you give me one example? What project, what money that's been spent has really ramped up this economy?
Well, we've heard that a lot of money has gone to state governments, which has kept them from firing people. If the state governments had to fire people, there'd be a lot more people on unemployment right now. Governor Doyle has said that he'd have to cut far more than he's had to cut in terms of state workers and in terms of state programs had that money not come in. There are examples around the country. We've got the Apostle Islands lighthouses. Obey is bringing a new sewer and infrastructure repairs to the city of Rhinelander. He's paying for infrastructure improvements to the Rhinelander Airport. We've got this interchange going on right now between Highway 29 and Highway 51. That's not from the stimulus package, but it's some of this pork barrel spending that Obey has been able to bring into the district. The arts block in downtown Wausau, which has helped rejuvenate all of downtown Wausau. All of this is government spending. And Obey's been able,
stimulus spending.
Well, you could view it that way. It's certainly helped the business economy, and it's helped bring people back to work. And Obey is able to do this because he's the chair of the House Appropriations Committee. He has a lot of power. There's a Democratic administration. He brings the bacon home to his district. If you're elected, Sean, you won't have any power. You won't have a position like that. You won't be able to bring anything back. So why should people vote for you? I mean, even if they agree with you on the issues, it makes more economic sense to retain Dave Obey.
And I think that's a great question. And I got to tell you, when I announced in Wausau, at Wausau Homes, I did my announcement. It was 11 or 12 minutes. I stepped off the stage, and there you were with a microphone, and you asked me
that very question.
You did. And, I look at some of the stimulus spending, and, we have $25,000 for the Spiral Q Puppet Theater. $25,000 for the Pig Iron Theater we're dealing with, dance and drama clowns and puppetry. And there's example after example.
But you pump money into the arts, that still puts people back to work. There are people in the arts who need to be
employed. And Glenn, I mean, that is a great socialist philosophy by having the government, one, take over business like they have here, and they pump money into the economy, and they're the ones that are the driving force of economies. We would think that the Soviet Union would not be dissolved, but it would be a great thriving power in the country, or in the world. That's not the case, Glenn. And the truth is, businesses are the ones that create job growth. 70 to 80% of jobs that are created in the country are created by small businesses, people who have new ideas, that have new inventions, that take risk, purchase capital, employ people. That's where we get the real job growth. This bill does very little to support our small businesses. If we're going to have long-term sustainable growth through this cycle or through this next difficult period, which whether it'll be 2, 3, 5 years, we're going to recover through small businesses. Now, once you do those projects out at the airport or the wastewater treatment plant or you fix the lighthouses up in the Apostle Islands, which I think those are great projects. Is that really going to stimulate the economy? How many long-term jobs do we get from that? It's short-term, but it's not long-term. And
but
I think, well,
businesses can't survive without infrastructure.
One other point on that is a lot of this spending that Dave Obey has advocated for, therefore pork projects. And the truth is we're not getting that money, Glenn, from our piggy bank or from the U.S. savings account. That money is coming from China, and we're borrowing it off the backs of our children, off the next generation and the generation after that. I think it's imperative if we're going to spend this money, we better be darn sure the project is well worth it to make my kids and my grandkids pay it back.
Sean Duffy, he's running for Congress against Dave Obey, and we're going to be back with your phone calls. We're way over time right now. I have to take a break, and we will be back right after this. You're listening to Route 51 Regional Talk Radio on the Ideas Network.
Support for Wisconsin Public Radio comes from UMR, providing employee benefits administration, integrated health management, and pharmacy benefits administration for self-funded employers throughout the U.S. More about UMR at umr.com.
For more information on regional programming for North Central Wisconsin, here at Wisconsin Public Radio, or to have your community event listed with us, check out our local website at wpr.org/WLBL.
Your business can reach an audience like no other in Wisconsin by supporting programming on Wisconsin Public Radio. For more information about business sponsorships, call Rick Ryer at 1-800-749-3906.
We have congressional candidate Sean Duffy with us. We're going to go back to the phones. I believe it's Moira in Antigo. Am I pronouncing your name right?
Yeah, it's Moira.
Moira, okay.
Good Gaelic Irish name.
We're running short of time. We've only got a couple of minutes before news. So what's your question, Moira?
Okay, my question is, I've got some friends that, you know, are in the small business, and they're struggling to make ends meet. And I'm wondering, Sean, what your thoughts are, Mr. Duffy, actually, on the increases in the minimum wage, what your thoughts are there.
Well, you know, I think that's a difficult issue. One, I think workers need to receive a fair wage for the services that are provided. But oftentimes there's a negative effect from raising the minimum wage in that these small business owners are unable to employ as many people because it cuts into their bottom line, or they have to raise their prices, which means less business comes in. I think the best way to allow for businesses and employees to work out pay is let them do that themselves. A fair wage for a fair day's work is what I think the answer is. And a lot of these folks that are making minimum wage, oftentimes they're high school students or college students. You know, it's a different scenario when we have folks that are trying to pay for, you know, their family and put food on the table and pay their rent or pay their mortgage. That's a different story. But all in all, I like to leave those decisions between employer and employee.
Would you go so far as to say we shouldn't have any minimum wage at all?
No, I don't. I mean, I think there is a base minimum we should have. But when you start to increase it, especially during difficult times like this, when business owners are struggling to make ends meet, I think it just puts more pressure on small businesses at a time when they can't afford it.
Could I just make one
very quickly
thought on that? You know,
we've got 30 seconds more.
Okay, 30 seconds. It's just, you know, when you say it's high school kids and college kids, that's simply not true. There are, I don't know what the percentage, but a lot of the women I know are working in, you know, all these retail places. And quite frankly, my college son applied for a job at one of the retail places, and he was appalled at how low the pay was when he had 10 other people competing with him for this job, and he wouldn't have taken the job. And a lot of women, it's their second income. I mean, there's an awful lot of women.
Moira,
we're
going to have to leave it at that. You've made your point. We'll have Sean respond to it after this break. Sean Duffy, a candidate for Congress, Republican, trying to replace Dave Obey. We'll be back with more of your calls after this.
The staff at WPR's Audience Services is knowledgeable, friendly, and helpful. They often know the answer to your question right away. If they don't, they'll work hard to get the answer and get back to you. To send an email, visit WPR.org and click on Listener Feedback.
We're back on Route 51, Regional Talk Radio on the Ideas Network with Sean Duffy, Republican congressional candidate, 7th District. He is working to unseat Dave Obey. He faces a primary challenge against Dan Milkey, the organic farmer who ran against Obey last time around. We are taking your phone calls at 261-6371, 261-6371, or 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Sean, you've got a news release that you put out today. It says, Obey's disappearing act is appalling. Now, you're taking Dave Obey to task for not holding town hall forums on health care. Explain yourself.
Well, you know, if you watch the news, it's apparent that congressmen and senators around the country, and especially here in Wisconsin, are holding town hall meetings or listening sessions to get feedback from their constituents about what they feel about health care. And Dave Obey, being the huge player that he is in Washington, has come home and he hasn't held any town hall meetings or any listening sessions, but for the ones that he invites a select few to come to, and then we'll see the next day in the press that he was in town holding what he would like to call a meeting. But if the vast majority of the voters in this district want to go see Dave Obey and ask him about cap and trade, or the stimulus package, or more importantly, healthcare, they can't find him. Just recently, up in my area, he was out at the Lighthouses presenting, I think, a $5 million check. And he held what he called an impromptu press conference. And there they asked him about the money for the Lighthouses. As Dave Obey's talking about Lighthouses, the people here want to talk about healthcare. And why shouldn't we have access to our representative to give him feedback on what we think on that issue? This is, I think, a move that it would be a poster child for arrogance.
Now, we asked Dave Obey about that last week. In fact, 1 week ago today, I asked him specifically about the town hall forums, how loud they were, the protests at some of those forums, and we asked him whether or not they were an indication that the tide was turning against the health care reform effort. I'm going to play you a minute-long clip of that interview. Are these protests a sign that opinion is turning against national health care reform?
No. What they're a sign of is that lobbyists on K Street are financing a coordinated national operation to try to turn this debate into chaos. There are two organizations. We have copies of both of their memos. And what they say is, come in early, spread around the room, get the front seats, and don't wait for the question period to begin. Begin to shout out. Have others begin to shut out. It's an instruction sheet in how to bring chaos to any public discussion. In my view, it's thuggery, it's disgraceful, despite the fact that the public in the last election expressed a strong yearning for people to get together and find common ground. Despite that fact, you have a tiny cadre of hardcore right-wing activists who are willing to destroy the process on a daily basis in order to get their way and embarrass their opposition.
Does Sean Duffy react to that clip? Why should Dave Obey hold a town hall forum if it's going to be flooded by thugs, in his words, and a tiny cadre of hardcore right-wing activists?
First of all, that I'm here talking to you, taking phone calls on this issue, will be indicative of the kind of representative I'll be in Washington. I care what people think on issues and on bills, and I want feedback. I want to have a discussion. I want to have a conversation with the voters. I think it's telling that Dave Obey would come in and just give a one-line or five-line commentary on questions that are asked, but he won't take tough questions on these bills from the voters or from people who are going to call into your show. That's false. This is thuggery. If you look at Republicans who have held town hall meetings, and I think a perfect example is Congressman Jim Sensenbrenner, a Republican right outside of Milwaukee. He held a town hall meeting about 3 weeks ago, and the place was full of Democrats, no Republicans, and they were hounding him hard. There are people on both sides of these issues that are passionate, and they want to have their voices heard. And to diminish what they think on the issue by calling them thugs is just unacceptable. You know, I think that we want to know what Dave Obey is doing in Washington, and he won't tell us. We deserve to have a representative who will have a town hall meeting and will hear our feedback. Now, I got to tell you, Glenn, I'm not in favor of folks who come in and shout people down and disrupt meetings, but I'm in favor of people who are upset and angry coming in and having their voices heard, and so their congressman can get the views of people in the district. And he's not allowing that. And I'm telling you what,
but why
if I'm elected,
why can't people do that?
I will be here.
Why can't people do that in a civil way on both sides?
But as you watch the television clips, and we've all seen them, how many of those shows have been from the Wisconsin delegation? I think we're a different kind of people here. We're respectful, we're kind, but we're passionate, and we like our freedoms, and we like our health care, and we want to have a discussion, and we'll do it in a very positive, positive way, Glenn.
Republican congressional candidate Sean Duffy, 261-6371, 1-800-780-9742. Lenore in Wausau has been waiting very patiently. Lenore, you're on Route 51.
Hi, I do have a question on health care. I would like to know if you support or oppose a health care bill that would allow me to choose between a private insurance plan or a public option like Medicare. And by the way, Congressman Kagan had a meeting where he was shouted down. But anyway, that's not my question. I'd like to know what you think about private insurance or public option.
And first of all, Lenore, I'm not in favor of shutting anyone down, but I am in favor of a forum where we can have a conversation, even like we're having right now. And
I am too.
And I don't know if Dave Obey has a plan to come in and do Route 51 and take questions from the callers like I'm doing today. But I'm in favor of choice. I think people should be able to, if they're eligible for Medicare, access Medicare or buy private insurance. And that's one of the fears I have with the proposed legislation, is that eventually we're not going to have private insurance. We're going to move to a system that is only government-based, and we're not going to have choice.
Well, but if the public option is so good that it drives public insurance out, gee, doesn't that tell you something?
Well, that's a matter of whether it's private insurance is being driven out because the public option is so great. When the public option, when the legislators don't have to make a profit, one, and two, they make the rules, it's pretty tough to compete with that. When they're on the court and they're the referee, it's pretty tough to win that game. And that's one of the problems here.
I think it's pretty sad that health insurance is for profit anyway. Why should we profit on the health and death of people?
And
I think it should be not for profit.
And if you can convince, and I was just speaking to an individual who was a neurosurgeon who went to 4 years of medical school and 6 years of residency, if you can convince those people to do their work for $30,000 or $60,000 or $100,000 a year, I think that's great. I don't think that's going to happen, and we're not going to get people to go into those fields and specialize unless there's a return for it. So, sadly,
I don't mind the doctors making money, but it's the insurance companies that are making record profits.
And that's why I agree with you, and we have to address that. And one of the best ways to address the insurance companies is to open this thing up for competition. And, you know, Obama has indicated that he thinks the government getting involved will increase competition. Well, I think the easiest way to do that, that costs not $1, is to open competition up across state lines. Why shouldn't you, Lenore, be able to buy a health insurance policy out of Tennessee if it fits your needs best?
Because
or out of California?
I can't, as an individual, buy a health care plan.
Well, if you can afford a health care plan, why not be able to buy it from a different state? And that means that we just don't have companies in Wisconsin competing for our insurance dollar. We're forcing them to compete against companies around the country.
Lenore, thanks
mm-hmm.
so much for the phone
okay.
call. I'm going to play what Dave Obey said on this very issue 1 week ago today.
We're trying to put the cop back on the beat or the umpire back on the field, and we're trying to say to insurance companies, if you want to sell insurance in this country, you cannot discriminate on the basis of pre-existing conditions. We don't want people to be locked into a job that they dislike because they've got a kid with a serious health problem and they won't be able to get health coverage if they move. We want to get rid of the lifetime limit on what insurance companies will pay if you get really sick. We want to put some limits on what you have to pay before your insurance takes over in case you hit a catastrophic problem. So what we want to do is to give people the same choice of private plans, the same choice that members of Congress have in their plan, and then we want to add one option to that, which is a public option similar to Medicare, so that we have a way of keeping the insurance companies honest in terms of cost. Earlier in the debate, insurance companies said, oh, we don't want a single-payer plan like Canada because there should be competition. Okay, so now we're saying, let's have competition, but we want a little bit more competition than we have right now in the form of a public plan. And now the insurance industry says, oh, no, we don't want a government-run program. What do they think Medicare is? What do they think Medicaid is? What do they think the veterans' health care programs are? I mean, those are all programs overseen by the government that provide consumers with a pretty good deal.
Sean, let's take that last point. Medicare, the veterans' health care program, Medicaid, these are all government programs. You want to do away with those?
No, I don't. And those are components that benefit a select portion of the population. And the truth is, we've seen how effective the government has run those programs. They're, especially Medicare, it's bankrupt. We can't pay for it. Why do we want to bring the whole medical care in under the umbrella of government? You know, Dave at the start of that clip says, you know, he wants the government to be an ump on the field again, but they're all also going to be a player on the field. I think eventually that's going to cause a government takeover of healthcare. And I don't think people in Wisconsin want a bureaucrat sitting at the table between the patient and the doctor. And I think what we're doing here, Glenn, is we're taking a dysfunctional system right now with healthcare costs that are increasing year over year at a staggering rate. And we're taking that system and we're going to have the government pay for it. We're not addressing the fundamental reasons why healthcare costs are going up. And what's going to happen here to contain the costs is we're going to have to ration care. And for me, that's unacceptable. I think there's common sense principles, Glenn.
Don't we already have rationing done by the insurance companies? And don't we already have bureaucrats between the doctor and the patient? The bureaucrats don't work for the government. They work for the insurance companies.
I am so glad you asked that. That's right. We do have some rationing right now. But the truth is, if my insurance company is rationing my care, I can look to a different insurance company. There's choice for me. If there is only one option, and it's the government option, and they're rationing my care, I have nowhere else to go. I think we have to have common sense approaches so we can reduce the cost of healthcare, and then we can increase access. And there's a lot of common sense approaches that I have here that we can talk to later on the show, but that's the end result.
Should insurance companies be able to dump you for having a pre-existing condition?
You know, that's a problem. I have someone in the courthouse that I know very well that has a pre-existing condition that is having difficulty getting health care. And we have to have some regulation, some forum where folks who have pre-existing conditions can access health care. We can't exclude them from the pool.
What about people who are locked in a job? They can't quit the job. They can't realize their dream and open their own business because they've got a kid who's got a chronic disease and they would never be able to buy insurance on the open market.
And you throw out certain examples like that.
And that happens all the time.
Right. And I think there is a role for government to help regulate, to force insurance companies to get involved and take those patients on to make sure they have coverage and spread that risk across the pool. Right now, what they do is they completely throw them to the side and these folks can't get coverage, and that's wrong. But that doesn't mean, because we have that one example, we take everyone and throw them under the government system.
Okay, let's go back to the phone. Sue and Spencer, you're on route. Oh, I'm sorry, I just went to Ashley in Chippewa Falls. Ashley, you're on Route 51.
Hi there. I have a question for Sean. Sean, you have been a district attorney for a number of years, and I'm wondering what accomplishments you are most proud of as district attorney and how those will help you to be a good congressman.
All right. Thanks so much, Ashley.
Thank you, Ashley. As a DA, I'm the lead law enforcement officer in the county. And one of the things I'm most proud of is the work we've done with child sexual assaults. We have quite a few of those cases coming out of Ashland County, and they're the most difficult cases a prosecutor handles because we're dealing with child victims. And we've had a great success rate of prosecuting offenders of children who sexually assault them. And just a quick note here, Glenn, before we move on, we started one of the first internet child sexting operations in the state of Wisconsin. You see that on ABC, To Catch a Predator. We're doing that in Ashland. We caught roughly 20 people out of our sting operation before we got too much press and we had to shut it down. But we're protecting kids and protecting the community in Ashland.
All right, Ashley, thanks so much for the phone call. We're going to take a quick break. Sue and Spencer, you've been hanging on for almost a half hour. Hang on for another minute. You're next on Route 51 Regional Talk Radio.
Support for Wisconsin Public Radio comes from UMR, providing Employee Benefits Administration, Integrated Health Management, and Pharmacy Benefits Administration for self-funded employers throughout the U.S. More about UMR at umr.com.
For more information on regional programming for North Central Wisconsin here at Wisconsin Public Radio, or to have your community event listed with us, check out our local website at wpr.org/WLBL. We're back on Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. I'm Glenn Moberg. Our guest today, Sean Duffy, Republican candidate for Congress in the 7th District, District Attorney of Ashland County. We're taking your phone calls at 261-6371 or 1-800-780-9742. Back to the phones. Sue, you have been so patient, and Spencer.
Hi, Mr. Duffy. I had a chance last summer when Dan Mielke was on the campaign trail to hear him talk a couple times. And he said he's against abortion with no exceptions at all. And now I just heard you say that you don't like the idea of putting a bureaucrat between a patient and their doctor. And I'm hoping you're going to tell me on this issue you're going to make an exception.
I'm sorry. And I guess I'm confused by your your question, but I'll answer it. You're talking about abortion, and I come down on the issue of life. I'm a pro-life Catholic, and you know what? I think I'm consistent throughout. I'm against the death penalty as well as a prosecutor. For me, those decisions should be made by a higher power. I don't make those calls.
No exceptions.
So that would be no exceptions in the case of rape. If a woman is raped, she can't get an abortion?
You know, if I believe it's a child, which is why I'm saying I'm pro-life, you know, I don't have exceptions.
What about people who don't believe it's a child? And there are a lot of people out there. Should you impose your private religious beliefs on them?
And the truth is, I'm not, because this has been left up to the courts, and it's not going to be an issue that's addressed by Congress. I think the best way to handle this is to make this issue a state issue and let people vote on whether they think there should or shouldn't be abortions. You asked me my personal opinion, and I've given it here.
Well, we're interested in how your personal opinion will affect the way you legislate.
Sure.
Sue, thanks so much for the phone call. Let's
go to
Jerry in Wausau. Jerry, you're on Route 51. Hello, Jerry.
Hello. I am interested in the candidate's stance or criticism of the Democrats' deficit financing in this time of crisis. I've followed the budget, national federal budget, for a number of years, and it's interesting that when Carter left office, we had a $900 billion deficit. By the time that the Reagan and the first Bush left office, that had more than quadrupled. George Bush the second, after Clinton had balanced the budget for three of the last 4 years in office, took the deficit from $5.5 to $10.5 trillion. We've spent with the invasion in Iraq, the defense budget went from under $300 billion a year to well over $500 billion plus the $700-800 in extra appropriations. So you're talking about a total of $1.8 trillion there. And I just find it just kind of ingenuous of Republicans to make such a big issue of the Democrats now trying to stave off a depression. Many of the conditions leading to that depression coming from the previous administration's
All right.
decisions.
Jerry, thanks so much. Sean, he's saying you Republicans have no basis for complaining about deficit spending.
Well, as a Republican candidate, I think I do, but I don't carry any water for Republicans who have spent like drunken sailors. It's been horrible, and I don't defend them. But the deal is that Obama is spending four times more than Bush's biggest year. We oftentimes talk about CO2 and a tipping point. I think that is very relevant to debt. We're at a tipping point with debt. We owe $11.5 trillion right now. I have five children and my wife and myself. There's seven of us in my family. If we divide that debt out between every man, woman, and child in the country, that's $40,000 for every man, woman, and child in national debt. For my family alone, that's $280,000 if we were to apportion my family my amount of debt. They're going to double that in the next 10 years. That's $560,000 of debt for my family. This is unacceptable. This is going to crush our economy.
Back to the phones. Jeff in Wausau, you're on Route 51.
Hi. I was just wondering, in the previous election 2 years ago, Mr. Duffy supported Milkey for the Republican nomination to run against Mr. Obey. I was just wondering, what is different this time? What's wrong with Milkey this time around that you're running against him?
Well, first off, I didn't publicly endorse a congressional candidate in the last cycle or the cycle before that. But to answer your question, I think that I'm the best candidate to win. I think I have the best record. I think I have the best support and the best ideas to take on Dave Obey and bring common sense Wisconsin values to Washington. And that's why I got in the race. And that's why I'm here talking to you guys.
All right. Jeff, thanks for the call.
Right.
Sorry we don't have more time for you. We were down to our last 3 minutes. I'm going to try to squeeze a couple more calls in. Jim in Wisconsin Rapids, you're on Route 51.
Hi. My first question was about how much per family these bills would cost, and Sean just answered that question for me. And I'm wondering why Dave Obey and the Congressional Budget Office, a nonpartisan outfit, keep saying this will add $1 trillion to the deficit, and why Mr. Obey chooses to ignore that. And my last comment is, I have an autistic daughter, and you were saying how certain plans might drop us, you know, we might not be able to get coverage. my current coverage at my employer covers her totally, but the government bill says she might not be covered, and it would be up to a non-elected either czar or committee to decide if she would be eligible for coverage if I ever leave my job. And I'm not happy about that, so I'd just like to hear Sean's comments on that.
And Jim, I agree with that. That's one of the major outrages here, is that when we ration care, it's going to be rationed for the elderly, because we're going to cut back Medicare, and that's how Obama has proposed paying for this this new health care bill. And we're also going to cut back care for special needs children, and that's unacceptable.
Jim, thanks so much for the phone call. We have to move on. We've got time for one more call. We'll go to Ed in Wausau. Ed, you're on Route 51. Hello, Ed.
Yes, I'm here.
Ed, you're on Route 51. You're on the radio.
Yeah. Hey, Sean. Lots been said about Barack Obama's citizenship, and I was just wondering, where do you stand on that? Do you think he's a citizen or not?
You know, Ed, I guess I trust a lot of people in the media who are indicating he's a citizen. I guess my assistant in my office, who is a Democrat, we banter about this all the time, and I just say, just show the birth certificate, and that would be fine. But you know what? He is the president. I think we move beyond that and talk about the real issues that people care about, which, and I'm not saying that you don't care about that issue, but there's some real challenges that we have, which is health care and this economy, and that's what I'm focusing on here. And you know what? On these issues, I challenge Dave Obey to get out there and talk to the people, see where they stand, and maybe come on your program, Glenn, where he can take questions from the callers.
Well, he has done that before,
but
several times.
But in this August break, when people are so upset about what's going on with health care, I challenge him to come in and hear what folks think about his health care bill.
Sean, thanks so much for spending some time with us.
Thanks, Glenn.
Sean Duffy, a Republican candidate for Congress in the 7th Congressional District. A reminder that Mr. Duffy faces a Republican primary challenge from organic farmer Dan Mielke, and that one of the two of them, unless there's another candidate who steps forward, will take on longtime incumbent Democrat Dave Obey in the November election. I'm Glenn Moberg of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks to our executive producer, Rick Ryer, our on-air producer, Kelson Quisler, our online producer, Scott Clark. Thanks, as always, to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. A reminder, you can communicate with us now on Twitter and Facebook. Find us on Twitter at twitter.com/Route51Show. If you're on Facebook, put Route 51 in the search bar, then click on our fan page. Next week, Route 51 welcomes jazz singer extraordinaire and Wisconsin native Janet Planet. She'll tell us about her new CD of The I Sing, a collection of songs about great American cities and places. We'll talk about her music and about the burgeoning jazz scene in north central Wisconsin. Route 51 can be heard every Thursday at 5 on the Ideas Stations WLBL 91.9 FM Wausau, 930 AM Auburndale Stevens Point, WHBM 90.3 FM Park Falls, and now on WHRM 90.9 FM Wausau High Definition Channel 3. Special thanks to all of you who called in today. Keep listening. Thanks for riding with us. Until next week, we're heading out of town.